Isn't it time you lived life on your own terms? If not now, when? Visit abrilliantgamble.com for more information on Blair's new exciting online coaching program. Midlife doesn't have to be a crisis. It's a time to rethink who you are and what you really want from your work, your life, and yourself. Sacrificing your soul stops here. It's time to make some plans, make them happen, and live the life you deserve. With interviews, stories from her own adventures, and expert insights, here's your host, best-selling author, speaker, and coach, Blair Palmer.
Hello and welcome to episode 105 of A Brilliant Gamble, the podcast. I hope you are really, really well. It is exciting times here. This week, the fencing guy is here, and that means that in a week's time, we will actually be ready for our first livestock animals, which will be our chickens. So I've already started talking to the lady that I'd like to buy our chickens from. And, you know, next week's show, I may be able to tell you that we have ordered our chickens or they're on their way or whatever, if that's the kind of thing you're interested in. If you are interested in that kind of thing, you might also like to know that Ivy and I completed one day of the British Alpaca Society's alpaca husbandry course. We've done the first day and we have the second day coming up in March, plus another day with them on the business of having alpacas, and we absolutely loved it. So watch out on the Instagram feed for lots of alpaca pictures, because I'm pretty sure that's going to be the animal after the chickens. But anyway, that's what's happening with our brilliant gamble. I hope you're well, and I hope that your New Year's resolutions, if you set them, are going really well. If you are struggling or if you feel you need support making those dreams a reality, stick around to the end of the show when I will tell you about our online program. You can head over to abrilliantgamble.com and check out A Brilliant Gamble online to find a program that is specifically designed to help people make the big, bold changes they need to make in order to create the life that they want to live. And as I often say, if not now, when? But don't head over there right now. I will talk more about it at the end of the show. And I want you to listen to today's interview, because this is a great one. If you're interested in shaking things up and wondering whether you can really do it, today's guest is a huge inspiration. In 2012, Sunday Burquest was diagnosed with breast cancer. And after multiple surgeries and chemo and radiation, and then a bout of depression that followed, even after she discovered she was well, that she'd recovered, she discovered that she was much stronger than she imagined. And so she decided to follow her dream and apply to the Emmy Award-winning reality TV show Survivor. And she got in. She survived quite a long time. I understand that she was the longest serving, oldest woman who's ever been on the show. It's something we talk about in our interview. And since then, she has set up an organization called Grit Girl. She describes herself as a grit girl. And I really wanted to talk to her about how she's embraced so much change in her life, ignored suggestions that there are certain things you can't do past a certain age, and how she's continuing to challenge herself even after that experience of being on the TV show. So I won't talk to you more about what's in it. We have such a great time. She's such a lovely lady. And as I say, if you're sitting on the cusp of wondering whether you can really make a change, whether you're too old, whether you've got what it takes, then I think you will find Sunday gives you the inspiration to make it happen. Let's go to the interview. Sunday, it's so great to see. How are you today?
I am fabulous. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Now, we are recording this. By the time people hear this, Christmas will be long gone. But we're recording this just a few days before Christmas. How are you feeling about the upcoming festivities?
I'm excited. I have realized the older I get, the less stressed out I get about everything. I used to make my family leave the house while I got ready for Christmas Eve. And now that I'm a little older, I'm starting to be like, you know, everything doesn't have to be perfect. I don't need to stay up and kill myself for a week before Christmas. So I think I'm getting a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would like to say that I'm like that, but I think I am, but that's not because I'm wiser. It's just because I'm more tired and probably a bit lazier. I just can't muster up
maybe
my stress that I used to be able to muster.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. That's probably part of it too, I'm sure. Yeah, it's just, everything doesn't have to be, you know, perfect. That's what I've learned. It doesn't have to be perfect. Who cares?
Well, I'm sure that will come up in our conversation, because there's just so many things that I want to talk to you about. I mean, let's start with Survivor, which, you know, for my UK audience, they might not know that you were on the American version of Survivor. The American audience will definitely know. Tell me how that came about and why it was so important at this point in your life for you to embark on something like that.
Well, I will tell you, first of all, as a family, we've been watching the show since it started. So it's one show that we all kind of like together. And I would say about 10 years ago, I offhandedly said, I'm going to be on that show one day. And I've got three boys and a girl, and my boys were like, ha, you'd never survive one day, Mom. Yeah, right. You know, because I'm not the outdoorsy camping girl. That's not me. I like air conditioning. I like hotels, not tents. And so that kind of was in the back of my head. So in 2012, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And, you know, I had the surgeries, the chemo, radiation, and then actually a couple years of depression that I really did not know was going to accompany the cancer. When I got on the other side, I'll say, you're not really ever totally on the other side, but when I kind of got through the bulk of the front end of it, I'll say it like that. My oldest son came to me and he's like, Mom, you got through the cancer. I think you can do this. And we'd actually talked about doing it together. And so he's like, let's just go for the dream. And I was turning 45. And I was like, you know what? If I'm ever going to do it, now is the time to do it. So my son and I sent in an audition video together for a season called Blood versus Water. And it's when you go on with a blood relative. And it didn't really go anywhere. I got a call, but, you know, whatever. And then the next year I applied again, and that's when it progressed.
And, I mean, that whole thing is an extraordinary story. Let's come in a minute to actually what happened when you got on the show and the impact of that. But it's very interesting that you mention about the depression that followed your recovery, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if... Mm-hmm. You know, I've been fortunate enough to not have cancer in my life yet, but I've made lots and lots of changes in my life. And one of the things that I've noticed is that you often don't feel the elation that at certain points when you're kind of supposed to, when you've achieved the goal or you've got better or whatever, you don't feel the elation that you're expecting to feel. What, now you've had a little bit of time to reflect on that, what do you make of how you responded to getting better?
I still is kind of a mystery to me. I have to say, prior to cancer, anxiety, depression was never something that I really dealt with. I knew people that did, but I didn't have that personal idea of what it was like. So actually, it ended up being a good thing because it brought a lot of empathy to me that I just didn't have, because I didn't understand what it felt like. That is the biggest lesson I took away, is going back and going, okay, now when I see someone that's going through it, it isn't a matter of telling them, just get over it. Just buck up, you know? And it was really learning that time was really what helped me, giving myself a break, not expecting myself to snap out of it. It was okay to not clean the house. or cook or do laundry, even though I had four kids at home.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you were able to make meaning of it. And if the meaning that you made of it has helped you since.
Yes. I would say definitely a huge part of it, like I said, is the empathy. It's compassion. It's grace for myself and for others when they're going through something difficult. It's a lot of it for me was the example I was setting for my kids, which was twofold. One, I'm going to fight and I'm not going to give up, right? I'm not going to sit in the corner and cry every day and feel sorry for myself. However, I also wanted them to see the human hard side of what cancer looked like, because they're going to face something hard in their life, right? And so if they only saw me put on a front, everything's okay, I'm fine. When they go through something hard, they're going to think, what's wrong with me? My mom handled this fine, but I'm not. So it was important for me, for them to see that balance. I'm going to fight. I'm not going to give up. But yes, it's hard, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with me that I'm dealing with depression and anxiety right now. In fact, it's pretty darn normal. And it's okay. And I think those are the biggest lessons that I took out of it when I reflect back on it, and that I wanted my kids to walk away with.
So with all of that strength of mind and the self-awareness that all of that gave you, you then decided to stick yourself on TV on a remote island with no air conditioning and see what you were made of. Talk me through the process, because I've never applied to a TV show. So what actually happens after you've sent in your self-tape? Where does it go from there?
So you send it in, and they have people watching them, of course. And then they, you know, I've been told if they don't watch it past 20 seconds, if you don't catch them in the first 20 seconds, they're going to turn it off. So I think the breast cancer really played a really big part in me getting on the show, because they're looking for people with a story. So I definitely interjected that right away. So they take these, and then they start calling people that they think could have, you know, a shot. And that call is really an interview, even though you don't know it. They whittle those down, and eventually they invite people to go for final casting. And you go through a pretty rigorous process. Of interviews and testing, and from there they end up picking their final cast members. So it's very involved. I'll say that.
And I know that the chemistry between you, the people that they select to be on any particular season, or that maybe the lack of chemistry in some cases is part of it. Was that were the relationships one of the toughest parts? Because again, most of us think it's going to be things like physical discomfort and, you know, the sort of practical day-to-day things, but what was the toughest about that experience?
I will say it's relationships in the sense of your emotional and mental fortitude. The living conditions, like you said, once you get there, you adapt. And you know, it's like, I don't have toilet paper, oh well. I don't have a toothbrush. Oh, well, I'm sleeping in the dirt. Who cares, you know? But having the emotional part of the game, where here's my biggest thing, is that you're with people 24/7, right? I'm not with my family 24/7. No, it's my husband or my kids as much as I was with these people on the island that I don't even know. And you're with people all the time, yet at the exact same time, you're 100% alone. Because every person is trying to win $1 million. So that emotional, having to know what everyone's thinking at all times. I mean, hopefully you don't live your normal life like this, but if you walk by two people at work that are talking, you walk by. In Survivor, you go, are they talking about me? What did they say? Did they say something about me? I gotta find out what they said. Hopefully you don't live your life like that, but on the island, you have to be concerned about every person. Question every person's motive, every person's thought, you know, look, eye roll, comment to you. And it's mentally and physically, it makes you physically exhausted, the mental and emotional part of the game. And because you're trying to win $1 million, you have to constantly remind yourself, I came out here for my family. I left my family for 7 weeks with zero contact. But I've formed relationships with these people now. So it's a constant, do I betray this person who now I have this close relationship with? But if I do that, am I betraying my family that I left at home for 7 weeks? And it really gets jumbled up as much as every player wants to say before they go out, oh, I can divide it. It's a game. It's people and it's relationships. That was harder for me than the personality differences, because that can be difficult too. You can't escape anybody that's annoying on the island. And maybe you're the annoying one. So that's another thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit, you know, if you don't find anyone else annoying, it's probably because you're the one who's annoying.
You're the annoying one, yes, yeah. So it's a lot of self-awareness, you know, continually asking yourself how you're being perceived and what vibe you're giving off and that other people are taking, and are you giving off what you want them to see of you, you know? How much of yourself do you hide? In my normal everyday life, I'm a leader, I'm in charge of things, people look to me to make decisions. That's not exactly a great quality, especially for a female on Survivor. So you find yourself subduing some of your natural, at least my natural tendencies. When the group's making a decision, I want to say, okay, well, we need to do this. You should do that, and you should do that. You can't do that. So it's a lot of, okay, what do you think?
Yeah. That's tough. Yeah, it's tough for someone of your personality, I think, to keep that in. And to, I mean, you know, you say you wouldn't do that in everyday life, but it only sounds to me like what you're describing is what we do all the time, just heightened. Just
yes, like, you're right. We totally fall into that trap. Yeah, you're right. It is heightened because it's every conversation, and we do fall into the trap. You're right. At home, of the same thing. But $1 million isn't always as
no,
which is what makes it so exaggerated.
It's a pretty powerful motivator to kind of to twist your mind around into what's important, and also, you know, you would not be doing it if it weren't. Well, is that the case? Would you, if it wasn't for the $1 million, would you still have done that? Just to test yourself, you know?
Yes, because I mean, I wanted the $1 million, obviously, but really what I wanted was the title.
Right.
I wanted the title Soul Survivor. That's what I wanted. You know, $1 million is awesome and helps a lot, but I really wanted that title just to say I did it, just to prove, you know, there aren't a whole lot of female winners. There are, but especially not over, I would say, 30. It's a tough thing to do. So that is in the back of your mind the whole time too. I want to be the mom. I want to be the older female that wins this game. And, you know, that's what you're striving for when you're out there.
Yeah. A lot of people, I mean, you do have a title, because the title that you have is that you are the oldest female ever to be on the show, right? And for a long
time. Not ever, but in my season.
In your season. And you were oldest for most of the time you were there as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what is the significance? I mean, I know, we're pretty much the same age. So I know the significance of being older, or what it would be for me, but in a situation like that, why does it matter?
To me, it mattered, and probably not to anybody else, but to me, I would think to myself, you're keeping up with these guys. Like, I didn't feel it was noticeable on our island. I don't think anyone would have said, oh yeah, Sunday, she's the older one. It wasn't like that. In fact, I didn't even realize it till the end of the game. I was like, hey, wait a minute. I've been the oldest one here almost the whole game. And I hung with the millennials. I had just as many alliances with millennials, more than I did with Gen Xers. And it just said to me, you know what, age really is a number. I know that's totally a cliche, but I didn't feel like I was the oldest person. I didn't act like I was the oldest person. I just was like, I'm going to be me and do this to the best of my ability, and I'm not going to let my age hold me back or mess up my mental fortitude. You know, I kind of forgot I was the oldest one, to be honest with you, until I looked back on it. And I think it just says to other people, hey, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares? No one out there ever pointed out my age. Not one time. It just really became a non-factor, other than maybe some of my physical abilities, but that probably more to do with how much I worked out before I went out there than anything else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, but there was this, yeah, go ahead.
But you got pretty fit while you were there.
Well, yeah, you don't have a choice. I mean, at least you get skinny while you're there because you're not eating. You know.
Yeah. Your face, yeah. when you were weighed at the end. I mean, oh. You were so surprised.
It was so surprised.
You were like, will everyone else be told?
I wanted everyone to know I lost the most. That was an exciting moment for me. It didn't last very long, but it was awesome at the time.
Right.
Yeah, well, you don't get to see yourself. So you have no idea. The only way I knew I was losing weight is because I was using a rope to keep my shorts up, and I would have to keep tightening it, and my swimsuit started to, you know, come down, and they wouldn't fix it for me. So, yeah.
So what about life since? What's been different? Where have you taken the lessons you learned and the exposure that you got from being on that show?
Well, I stepped down from my full-time position. At the time, I was a college-age pastor with my husband, so I actually worked with millennials full-time anyways. And I started speaking, which is something that I always wanted to do out on my own. My husband was real supportive. So, you know, it's like building a brand. It's a new business. I wrote a book. I can't write about survivors, but I wrote a book about grit and, you know, getting through the cancer and many other things that happened in my life, like they do to many of us. And it's been great because there hasn't been any pressure, like, I have to make this happen, but an inner driven, like, I want to be successful. But it's not because, you know, if I don't, something terrible is going to happen. It's just, I feel like all women have this grit on the inside of them. I know that they do. And it sometimes it takes something that really tests us to discover it. And I really want women to know it's there and to tap into it. And especially younger women, you know, so that they can start using their voice now instead of waiting until something negative happens or till they're thinking that they have to be older to do it, because they don't. So really, I don't know. I have a heart for young women. I have a heart for moms. You know, I remember the days I was at home all day with fishy crackers and dirty diapers and, you know, Disney movies and feeling like I'm not even important, you know, but they are. And so I just like to encourage women. We're so hard on ourselves.
Yeah, I really love the use of the word grit and the grit girl kind of campaign that you're leading.
Yeah.
There was a piece of research done. You might know about it. It was students at West Point. And these researchers were looking at what are the indicators for someone being successful as they go through training, military training at West Point. Mm-hmm. And grit, determination, those things were far more important as an indicator of who would complete the program than educational achievement, than grades. And yet, so much pressure is put on academic study and kind of that mm-hmm. side of your of where your strengths lie. And so when I saw that you were using this term grit, I was like, well, that's so great, because it's a really an undervalued quality, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's, it's overlooked and it's not talked about, I don't think. I mean, I don't remember ever hearing about it in school or anywhere, really. I mean, I saw it in action through my mom. I saw it in people's lives, but I never was sat down and said, this is what grit looks like. This is how you tap into it. You have it. I think that's the biggest hurdle first, is helping women understand you have this. I mean, first of all, if you've ever had a child, talk about grit, you know, but not all women have or will, but women, they make stuff happen. When things happen and hit the fan and go wrong, who do you call? You call women, because within 5 minutes, they're going to have 10 meals come into your house. They're going to have a babysitter set up for you. They're going to have a campaign going. They're going to be raising money. I mean, when things happen, you call women, because when they band together, they'll get it done and they don't quit. And so I think it's more about highlighting and helping women see that that's already there than them feeling like they have to find it. It's really find it in you. You don't have to acquire it. You have it. Just tap into it, is how I look at it.
Yeah. And so it's more than determination, isn't it? This idea of grit. How do you define it?
Well, feel like I come up with a different definition every other day. But right now, I'm kind of going with, I'm calling it, a woman of grit is a woman who's got guts, who will do something that maybe others won't, who will stand up when maybe others won't. It's a woman who's resilient, but doesn't quit. And to me, that looks like every day. To me, resilience is an everyday action. Whether you're trying to get fit or work out, it's that every morning, even when I don't feel like it, I'm going to get up and make myself do this. Every morning, or, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to make myself keep doing this, because I know in the end I'll have a payoff. The I is influential. I feel like women of grit naturally meet other women and naturally encourage other women to come along and do the same. And last, they're tough. Women of grit are tough. They get knocked down, they get back up. And it reminds me, I don't know if you had these when you were little, but my brothers had these blow-up, it was like a blow-up toy with sand in the bottom, and you could hit it, and it would pop right back up, like a clown or something. Do you remember those? Did you guys have those?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's what it reminds me of. We're like those blow-up things, right? And life hits us, smacks us right in the face, but what do? Bam, we're right back up. Well, why? Well, we've got that foundation, which is that grit that holds us in place. So when we get knocked down, we're right back up. I'm not quitting. Yeah, I lost this job, or I gained 5 pounds during my diet, or I went through a divorce, or I went bankrupt. Whatever it is, I had cancer. I am down for a minute, but a woman with grit, she's going to bounce right back up. And every woman has that ability. It's just tapping into it.
So how, I mean, you say that every woman has it inside them. I agree. There's a chocolate bar here that's advertised as soft on the outside, crunchy on the inside. And I always thought to myself, oh, just like a woman, you know.
I love that. Oh my gosh, I'm going to write that down.
I'm sure that women and men, of course, have this thing inside them. But yeah. But a lot of women, I think, particularly once you've been through, you know, a couple of decades of being knocked back, mm-hmm. lose their sense of it. So how can we start to reconnect with that grit within us?
I think there's a few ways. First of all, I think it takes identifying and recognizing the lies that you're believing about yourself, right? Because when you get knocked down, you're, in my opinion, or for me, my first thought processes are usually not positive, right? My first thoughts are, I'm never going to get out of this. How am I ever going to get over this? How is my life ever going to get better? How am I ever, I can't do this. That's the first thought, I cannot do this. So A, recognizing the lie, really. Recognizing the negatives that we're saying to ourselves or maybe others are saying to us. Okay, so this is what I'm believing. I'm believing I can't do this. That's not actually true. So recognizing it and then from there going, okay, so since I know it's not true that I can't do it, it means I can do it. Now, how do I do it? And I think part of it is first changing our thought pattern, changing our mindset, changing our words. Instead of saying out loud 50 times a day, I can't do this. Even when you don't feel like it, being willing to say, you know what? I can do this. In your mind, you're going to be like, no, you can't. You feel like crap. But I can do this, because when you say it out loud, you'll start to believe your own self. So changing the thinking, changing the speaking, and then small actions. I think for me, I think sometimes we think we have to take on the world, right? Or, well, it doesn't count unless I make a big bang out of it. But maybe for me, like going through cancer, maybe my victory today is that I put clothes on. Maybe grit today meant I went for a short walk. Maybe grit today meant I, you know, washed one load of dishes. Whatever it looks like in your life and whatever hard you're going through, I think taking those small steps of action starts to give you back your confidence. Okay, I did go for a short walk today. Now I know I can do that. Tomorrow, maybe I can go a little bit longer, or maybe next week I can go a little bit longer. But I think in that process, it's giving ourselves the latitude and the grace to not feel like we have to have an A plus on day one. Maybe we're starting, we feel like we're starting at an F. I don't need an A plus. Tomorrow, I need a D minus, and I'm okay with that. The next day, maybe in a week or two, I'm gonna try and get a D, and maybe in 2 weeks, I'll be a D plus. But I think as women, we're so hard on ourselves, and I at least tend to think in all or none. So I think, well, if I can't do all of it, if I can't run a marathon, I might as well not even go for a walk, right? But really, the process of walking out grit is small things every day that start to bring back our confidence so that we keep going for the bigger thing and the next thing and eventually get to the A. I think our problem is we want it all so fast and we're so hard on ourselves that we think if I can't do it all right now, it's not worth doing. And that's a lie.
Yeah.
It is worth it.
Yeah. Something that I saw that you had said was about giving up on ourselves too soon.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're talking about, isn't it? That we, it's a combination of being incredibly tough on ourselves, which you would think of as, in some ways, that's a good thing, having high standards, you know, it's the kind of, that toughness is part of the grit. But then that particular kind of being tough then results in us just throwing our hands up and saying, ugh, there's no point in even trying.
Yeah, it immobilizes us. It causes us almost to freeze. And one way I like to say it is this, if you were my best friend, and you're my friend now, but if you're my friend and I saw you going through something really hard, cancer or divorce or whatever, I would never call you and say, all right, you've cried enough, get up and get out there and get over it. You've been in your bed too long. You get up, you need to go work out today. I would never do that. I would call you and say, is there anything I could bring you? Is there anything I could do for you today? Well, why don't we treat ourselves the same way that we would treat one of our friends that we were watching going through something difficult?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that brings me to something else that's very important to you, which is about actually our relationships with other women. And you know, we have traditionally lived in a world where other women are our competition. And it shouldn't be, but you know, maybe biologically, maybe you can blame our biology, or maybe just culturally, we are set up to be quite critical of other women, to see them as a threat. And I wonder if we turn that same competitiveness against ourselves as well.
Yeah. Almost competing with yourself.
So why was it so important? I mean, I'm thinking about you, you know, on the island and all of that, and some of your strongest relationships were with women, some of your strongest relationships were with men. But it's interesting that you emerge with, I know there was one relationship that there was a sacrifice to be made, and for you to stay, you know, in the game, you had to make that sacrifice, sort of sacrifice that relationship. And that was with another woman. When you, coincidentally, I mean, I'm sure it wasn't intentional, but another woman just happened
to be. Right.
Okay. Oh, this is a question I hadn't thought of asking you. If you were doing it again, would you have made that same sacrifice now you're where you are now and talking about, you know, collaborating with women, would you still have done it?
Yes, because for me, it wasn't a competition thing. I mean, competition in the sense we were playing a game, but it was more strategic about how I was placing myself in the game. So it happened to just be that person, not that woman, if that makes sense. In the long run, it didn't end up being a good move. So in a game sense, I would probably not make the same choice. But as far as it being a female to female, that honestly wasn't playing in my thought process. In fact, when I've watched the show over the years, I've seen it really become way more difficult the more women that work together. For this reason, because of the competitiveness, and it usually doesn't end up being a good strategy to work with a group of women, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, there's changes I would have made, but I don't know that that's one of them, just because of the dynamics of the situation.
Yeah, so I think it's a really good distinction to make, because there's always this idea that women should be good to each other. We should have each other's backs. You know, we should support each other. And then it kind of feeds into this, I need to be nice thing. And that is a bit, I mean, of course I want to be a good person. But I'm noticing that the more I create boundaries, or the more I am true to myself, the more I notice that not everyone likes it. And so, in fact, I was having a conversation today with my daughter saying, I think I'm becoming not very nice. Or at least I think I might be perceived to be not as nice as I used to be. If I was going to make sure that everyone else was okay with me, I'd have to pretzel myself in so many different situations, in so many ways. Like, I kind of couldn't live my own life. So you're not talking about that. You're not talking about, at all costs, making sure that every other woman in your life is okay. But actually, we're treating women as human beings, but not automatically seeing them as your competition just because they're a woman.
Exactly. Because for my game, I was making the best move. And I, like I said earlier, I had to remember, I left my family for 7 weeks. So for me to come home and say, you know what, I chose someone I met 20 days ago, and I chose something that was better for them than you that I left for 7 weeks, not being true to who I am, which is a mom first before a survivor player. And you're right. When you start making things in your own best interest, not everybody loves it. But I think women, if they'd give it a chance to put themselves in the same shoes, they would start to go, you know what? I respect the fact that she is doing what's best for her and her family, and not trying to people please with everybody else. So there's definitely a line there. And I think it has to come down to what's best for you and your family and your motive, right? Am I doing this because I just want to see her suffer and I want to look better? Okay, that's a problem. But am I doing this because I know I don't have the mental or emotional space to handle both relationships? that's different. I think it comes down to your motives too, and yeah. your intent and your heart.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. And you know, it is in some ways subtle, but in another way, it isn't, because going back to something you said before about questioning beliefs. You know, when we see other women as our competition, I mean, we still live in a world where there aren't that many women leaders, where if you're doing well at work, you may be one of the only women in that, you know, at that level in your organization. And that it might seem like there's not a lot of room for women and you're taking one of the spots, you know. But if you're, so we still live in that kind of world, but if your motivation for holding on to that job and not allowing other women to get in is because you see them as a threat to you, then that's completely different to doing the very best job you can and moving up the organization. So how can we, without diluting our own ambitions and kind of sacrificing ourselves, you know, and what we want to achieve in our lives, how can we help other women to achieve their goals and achieve their dreams, make their dreams a reality?
You know, I think there's a few ways that we can do it. Number one, I think being confident enough in yourself and what you're doing that you have no problem promoting what the next woman is doing. I think sometimes, you know, if you're worried about competition, you don't want to promote this speaker or that author if you're a speaker also. But really, I think that helps all of us as a whole. I'll tell you a story. I went to a solitude retreat, which you'd think I'd had enough of that, you know, in Fiji. But, you know, it's like no electronics and no talking for a weekend. And we get 1 hour to talk to people. So I happen to sit next to this woman and we get talking and she says, what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm a speaker. What do you speak on women and strength? She says, me too. I just released my second book. Do you want to know what it's called? Yeah. She said, it's called Brave is the New Beautiful. And I said, oh my word, I love it. I speak on women and strength also. And the next thing she said is what made me think you're my forever friend. She said, there's room for all of us. And it was in that moment I was like, that's what it is. There's room for all of us. And I think being willing to acknowledge that, sing the praises of another woman who's doing something that's even similar to you. It doesn't detract from you. And I think that's the core understanding, because someone else is succeeding does not mean I'm not. And I feel like it all comes around in the end. So being willing to, hey, could I help you with your thing and you help me with my thing? More people are hearing the message. More women's lives are being changed. And we're setting an example. To me, I don't see the lose in that. I just see a win-win.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's something that I've noticed as I've gotten older, that I am less threatened by other people doing the work that I'm doing, because in the end it stops being purely about me and my niche or my business or my income or whatever. It becomes about, yes, there's something bigger than that. We're trying to do something important here, and I won't be able to do it on my own. We all need, yeah, to be saying some of these things, and there needs to be a tidal wave of people saying some of these things. I'm not going to be able to change thousands of years of patriarchy on my own.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're way more powerful together than we are alone.
So, I mean, you've done so many things in your life that have involved pushing out the edges of that comfort zone, or in fact, in a lot of cases, stepping way outside the comfort zone. yeah. Okay, hit me with it. What's next? What are you working on at the moment that is outside of that comfort zone, or what do you see just coming around the corner?
Well, I have a couple of things. I'm working on a presentation to take into schools for girls on confidence and grit and empowerment, and that would be for high schools and colleges. I'm also working on a workbook. Curriculum is the wrong word. I would say more like a study. or workbook that could be in conjunction with that or get into college campuses and to young girls. And secondly, I'm working on partnering with some organization. I have a few I'm talking to really start helping women who are in trafficking, in sex trafficking. And, you know, I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and it's a big area for trafficking, unfortunately. And I've looked into organizations overseas and I just keep coming back to, this is happening in my community. What can I do to help? So embarking on that, developing some merchandise that can raise money to go towards that, something that is appealing to a younger generation, because millennials are very cause oriented. They have a lot of energy and they'll go do it. And they're very good at coming up with ideas. So as I'm getting out there, collaborating with some younger people and really coming up with a way to substantially help, practically help is what I like. I like practical help for victims of trafficking. So those are the things I'll be working on. I'm working on now, but coming in the next year.
That's fantastic. I mean, it doesn't sound like, I think a lot of people get to their mid-40s. I know that it started to happen to me, where you think to yourself, maybe it's time to get out the slippers and, kind of nestle down.
I peaked.
Yeah. I'm on the downward slide now, and I certainly was having those thoughts before I decided to sell my house and go on my travels and all that. I thought, no, I'm not allowing it. Yeah. But there certainly is a temptation, I think, to do that. It doesn't sound like you're going to be doing that anytime soon.
I certainly hope not. Now, as long as it's within my power, no, I will not be. And I've got a little bit more time now. I only have one. My daughter's a senior. She's graduating this year. So there's a little bit more liberty with time there. And I don't think my energy is going anywhere as long as I can help it. So yeah, who wants to sit around and do nothing?
Yeah.
Maybe somebody, but not me.
Yeah. No, I just can't imagine it. I can't imagine it. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been inspiring and fun and so useful to talk to you. I feel like, I would be useless on a show like that, really. I would be no good to anyone. But we're all. But for each of us, we have our own things that we think. Could I
exactly?
Could I maybe do it? And what I love is that you did. It's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. And we all can, right? There's always that something everyone has.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's do it.
Yeah, do it.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. It's so fun to talk to you.
I hope you really, really enjoyed that. I found talking to Sunday so inspirational. And although I personally couldn't last one day on that survivor island, each of us has our own things that are dreams of ours. And I think what Sunday proves is that if you want it and if you have that grit or you can find that grit within you, then you can really make it happen. Do check out her website. It's Grit Girl. And that is just iamgritgirl.com. All the information is on the show notes, so click through to that if you're interested to know more. Some really lovely articles, more about her, and even some stuff to buy from her. So I really recommend you go and check it out and start following her. She's a lovely, lovely, inspirational person. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, A Brilliant Gamble Online is the development program that I have designed to help you make your bold ideas become a reality. I absolutely love the content on this program. It was created based on the tools that I was using as I hit my own obstacles when we went on our big trip. And I'm using the same tools again as we launch our small holding adventure.
And I was trying and testing it live on people throughout that whole process who were also going through real practical changes in their lives. And when those people told me they were going through particular challenges or obstacles or having particular beliefs or assumptions get in the way, I created content to help them overcome those hurdles. And all of that is together in this program. So if you are heading off on an adventure, if you really want to see it through, you don't want to give up on it, you want to make sure you get out of your own way, that you're not the reason that you fail, and that you enjoy the journey to where you're going, not just delay the gratification until you get there, this is the program for you. So head over to brilliantgamble.com and click on Brilliant Gamble Online and check it out. If you have any questions about it, please drop me a line. If you're wondering if it's for you, drop me a line, let me know what your questions are, and I will answer as honestly as I possibly can whether this is the program for you. We're back again next week with another interview. We've got lots of really good interviews lined up, but in the meantime, please do stay in touch with us. And here's Ivy Palmer with all the information about how you can do that.
www.thebrilliantgamble.com. There you can get all the episodes of this show, plus read the blog. And on our coaching and classes page, you can find out more about the Brilliant Gamble personal development programs to help you navigate your way through the minefield of life, career, and change. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Brilliant Gamble and on our Brilliant Gamble Facebook page. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take a Brilliant Gamble